Listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples.
I'm Jesse Brown, and today I'm talking to a Palestinian-Canadian citizen journalist who gets stories the pros often miss, but who is despised by many in the Palestinian solidarity movement.
Beneath it all is an increasingly polarized society where people will justify hunting their neighbors.
One of the most detested people that you will find in regular attendance at pro-Palestine protests is a Palestinian Canadian named Karima Saad.
Fuck the police and fuck Karima! You can-
It's not just progressives who despise her. Yes, people on the left have called her a police informant, a self-hating Palestinian, a racist, a Zionist, a TERF, and a fascist. But she also has haters on the right who've called her a leftist, Antifa, and a World Economic Forum diva. But in reality, Karima Saad is, well, I actually have no idea what she is. She describes herself online as a journalist, a satirist, a protest watcher, and a media personality. But her day job is lawyer. In fact, every day on the way to work, I pass this rundown mall, the Chinatown Center, where her office occupies a space that used to house a Super 8 motel. Now, there's a sign for Karima. It reads, Cannabis Lawyer. She also does landlord-tenant law. But online, she's a whole different thing. Her website is called Karima Rules. Her profile pic is this little cartoon that she commissioned. She does that too, by the way, political cartoons that she writes and hires somebody to draw. She is confusing to me. And to be honest, until recently, I haven't really tried to figure her out. Until recently, Karima Saad was a name that kept popping up on my social media feeds that I intentionally avoided. You know, she always seemed to be getting shouted at by the most shouty, fighty people online. Anti-vaxxers and Freedom Convoy people shouted at her. Trans activists shouted at her. The most online opinion journalists shouted at her. I've got enough drama of my own. And so I just kind of kept my distance. But Karima Saad just keeps popping up. And not always in that bad way, but in a useful way. Again and again, when something goes down at a protest, it's Karima Saad who has the footage. She is there filming it. Or this videographer who she hires, Lee, he's there filming it. For example, when Toronto police cheerfully delivered coffee to protesters who were targeting a Jewish neighborhood, the photos that ran in the newspapers, they were from a Karima Rules video. When a Jewish counter-protester attacked pro-Palestine protesters with a nail gun, his arrest was in a Karima Rules video. Earlier, when Freedom Convoy protesters who were occupying Ottawa defaced a Terry Fox statue, news of which appalled mainstream Canada, well, the photo that ran in the Globe and Mail of that defaced statue was from a Karima Rules tweet. For reasons that I do not understand, Karima and Lee always seem to be there. They seem to document protests in Canada more consistently than any mainstream news journalists. And like I said, it's not always Palestine-Israel stuff. Karima was there in the cold in Ottawa during the trucker occupation. She travels to do this work. She does the tireless shoe leather stuff, just like the raw documentation that few news organizations have the resources or even the will to do these days. And listen, I know a little bit about generating revenue from online news coverage, and her operation, it just does not make financial sense to me. It seems almost certain that she is losing money from all this. And I also think that I know a little bit about the current toxic, bitter, divisive culture wars and political wars. Karima does not make sense to me within that either. If she is a shill or a hack, I can't tell who she is shilling or hacking for. I do not know what side she's on, or if she's on a side at all. All I know is that people keep telling me that she is not to be platformed, that she's toxic, that she has made people feel unsafe, that maybe she is unwell. She's been criticized by the Canadian Association of Journalists, the Canadian Anti-Hate Network, and the Law Society of Ontario for allegedly harassing behavior. That's what people say about her. But if I want to know her deal, maybe I should just ask her directly. I mean, she is just up the street. So wait for it.
Who are you?
My name is Karima.
No, thank you.
Oh, but I have a question about your activities with the Canadian
Network. You do things that are horrible for black people, and I want you to leave me alone now.
Can you please elaborate?
I would like you to stop and leave me alone immediately, because
I feel things to black people.
I feel unsafe with you next to me like this and threatening me.
I have not.
Why are you threatening me?
Get the f*** out of here. The arbiter on whether I'm allowed to exist in a public space. Put your hands up if you're in charge.
I am a public citizen.
So who are you?
I'm a what? Say it again. Say it to my brown face.
If you guys want to come in mass to an event, I'm going to record each and every one of you. Don't touch my camera.
I'm not touching your camera.
Who are you?
We would love to stand on your side.
Hey, listen. Listen carefully. Can I ask you what you're doing?
We're here to document this event every protest in Toronto.
Okay, I've seen you.
I've seen you
at the Palace of Music.
We've seen each other.
But what you're doing is you're inciting the crowd.
Right now, we're really forced into a tight space.
I don't have an issue if you want to film.
Space.
You have a right to film just like they have a right to protest.
Right.
But you cannot incite people.
We're standing still.
So I get it.
We're standing still.
I get it.
Standing
we're upsetting
still.
Them. And now we're going to... You put us in a bad position because now we're going to have to investigate an assault.
I don't understand you at all. I have no idea how to classify you mentally, how to think of what you do, or I don't know why you do it. There are a lot of very passionate opinions about you, and none of them have really explained you to me. Can you explain you to me?
Well, I don't know what you don't know or what perceptions already exist. I find that that is, you know, people come in with preconceived notions and this need to put people in silos, in boxes, in categories. I think we've come to rely on a lot of mental shortcuts in how we deal with one another.
Let me be specific about stuff. You have frustrated my very clear desire to understand who is this person and why is she doing this. I don't have to tell you that going out to document stuff is a lot of work, especially when we're talking about protests. I know you because I would much prefer to follow these things from the safety and comfort of my home or office. I've come out a few times to get a firsthand glimpse of it, but I'm not a beat reporter on the protest beat. But often when I'm trying to put together what happened, people are talking about this thing that happened, and anytime anything happens, we get completely contradictory accounts because the people who are documenting things are interested parties on either side of these conflicts. And so I often find myself in the position of like, well, let me try to figure out what actually happened here. And that's what has led me to your videos, because you seem to have documentation of things that nobody else has. I'll get to the question eventually. Bear with me. I've seen you and your videographer roughed up. I've seen you face intimidation. I think you've been arrested.
Yeah, I was at a Doug Ford rally and I got trespassed.
This is the dirty work of journalism that a lot of people, either they have kind of like an adrenaline thing, they need to be there, but at a certain point, most people like would rather not. But why do you do it?
There are a lot of answers to that. The first is that we live in very interesting times, and I saw an opportunity pretty early on to be on the ground experiencing that in a way that it seemed crazy to me to miss that opportunity, that this was happening. And so I'm talking back in 2020, 2021, when we first started to see lockdown, anti-lockdown protests, anti-mandate protests, and they weren't really being covered in the news, but it was clearly a phenomenon that mattered. And I mean, there was some coverage, but a lot of it was the protesters yelling at the fake news media, go away, go home, a bit of that heckling. And there wasn't really a persistence in let's carry on to cover this. And I think that there are many reasons for that within the media industry and how it works and, you know, what the incentives are and so forth. There was a gap. And, you know, within my own kind of everyone was affected by COVID in their own ways. And I lost my father. And
you lost your father to COVID.
To COVID. Uh-huh. And, you know, prior to that, likely to some echo chambers to a certain degree. I kind of wanted to understand, right? I wanted to understand what, you know, what were people on about? Where is this mistrust of our regular institutions? Where is that coming from? As a lawyer, would hear a lot of misconceptions about the charter or civil liberties. You know, there was a fair bit of free man on the land, sovereign citizen stuff, which all of this still exists. I was curious about it. And so that is kind of what initially put me in this landscape.
I don't want to make assumptions, but I'm inferring from what you, when you said that your father was in an echo chamber, that he was consuming a lot of content that was sort of skeptical of vaccines and science of vaccines and encroachments on freedom. He got involved in that whole movement?
I wouldn't say he was involved in any movement, but kind of in our conversations, it would come up. And, you know, I didn't really understand it. I didn't really understand where he was coming from all the time, which I suppose that's a quintessential parent-child relationship.
Sure.
You know, on this in particular, I didn't get it. And my office is on Spadina, and one of the protest routes would go by my office. So I would watch from upstairs as police were escorting this group of people, and we're not supposed to really be interacting with people, but they're all out together on the street, and what are their signs, and what's this all about? So at some point, I just went downstairs and, you know, took a few pictures, talked to people. I guess that was really kind of, then I got into it. I am also, I guess, a big professional wrestling fan. The pageantry of protest, the signs, the chants, the feuds sometimes between characters within different circuits.
The campy theatricality of it all. I don't mean to stare at you so quizzically. I think that why are you doing journalism? If that's the question, if the answer is because I'm curious to understand what's happening on the street around me, is a really good answer. It's just not one that you hear that often. To back up a little bit and try to make sense, because a lot of the things you said just sort of roll out like this is just sort of what happened. Not a lot of people can relate to what you just said as like, oh yeah, sure. That's how it, that's what happened to me too. It's pretty specific. If it's not too personal, when your father died, and I'm sorry for your loss, was he vaccinated?
No, and it was quite, I mean, this was March of 2021. So there weren't, it was still very early in all of that happening. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that there was, you know, some sort of, if only he had known this piece of information, things would have been different. I don't think that's the case. But it is what kind of set me on this path.
I'm not a psychologist or psychiatrist, but it strikes me, I mean, I think you kind of have said as much. You were trying to understand.
It was a coping thing. And I've coped my way, you know, 3 years into, like I said, it becomes increasingly transparent that what you see isn't always what you get on the protest circuit.
What do you mean?
What I mean by that is I've had the opportunity to observe the same people travel to different cities representing different causes at different times, sometimes in ways that don't actually mesh very neatly. And of course, you know, I would never, you can't put people in boxes, but there were some what looked to be inorganic patterns of the way certain protesters engage with issues.
What does that mean? So you're there a lot and you see the same faces at, these days it would be a Palestine solidarity protest. You would have seen these people before at a anti-vax protest?
Sometimes.
On which side?
It's a good question. So the Palestine-Israel issue has, I would say, fractured every group and movement that was, you know, existing pre-October 7th. And that's not to say that these issues didn't exist pre-October 7th, but the landscape changed quite dramatically. So within the freedom movement, you have people who are pro-Israel, you have people who are pro-Palestine. The same can be said of the, so like the progressive other side of the equation. In between Freedom Convoy and Israel-Palestine, I would say there was the drag story time.
I also would like access to children to teach them core values. The fifth dimension, spirituality, is core value. You can learn that just by hacking into the universe with your own brain. Why can't I get a taxpayer-funded event to teach children core values? But they get one to indoctrinate children because that's the only way homosexuals reproduce.
You know, anti-SOGI, gender ideology, those kind of issues were at the forefront.
Let me see if I'm understanding you and if I'm surprised by it and as curious about it as you are, because it doesn't surprise me that within the kind of like bundle of progressive politics, the same people who would be at a pro-Palestine protest might have been some sort of trans solidarity protest. I don't know where they would have been. I guess I imagine, not to put people in boxes, but I'd be surprised. I associate the anti-vax, anti-mask with right wing. So I would imagine they would be on the other side of that. You'd see the same people largely.
There were also a lot of people who would consider themselves to be on the left and likely would have been categorized that way by an impartial observer who were anti-vax. So the umbrella of anti-vax or anti-mandate was extremely large and captured.
There was a crunchy hippie part of the anti-vax.
Sure.
Big medicine, big pharma is trying to get me.
On the whole, though, I would agree that if someone identified as anti-vax, they were slotted in as being on the right, maybe even far right. And there were people who got excommunicated, I think that's probably the best word, from their respective circles because they landed on that side of that particular issue.
It's so interesting to me because the basic act of protesting is an attention-seeking activity,
mm-hmm.
which is fine. Like that's why would you go to the public and put up a sign and you want to bring attention to something. And it used to be that the greatest thing that could happen is if the media would come. But now everybody's holding up a phone and recording themselves doing the thing and manipulating the footage
mm-hmm.
in such a way to present, look what they did to me. Look what and you don't know what happened just before. You don't know what happened just after, which is often why I find myself relying on your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's more important than ever to have somebody there who is documenting it, not for that reason. But it's interesting that there seems to be no longer the desire from protesters to have that neutral observer. And in fact, the need to put people in boxes, the assumption, I think, as far as I can tell watching these videos, is they think that you're there to get them.
Yes, everyone thinks I work for the other side, that, you know, there's something nefarious. And I shouldn't say everyone, actually, because certain protest groups have, you know, come to see me as something of a Jane Goodall, I think, where I'm there in their environment. Maybe I am gently interacting.
Are they the gorillas?
In this analogy, yeah. So okay. Sorry, guys. But, you know, if we leave her to her devices, you know, it's just, this is an opportunity. This is an opportunity to be seen or heard in a different way. And then there are people who take the total opposite viewpoint on that, who have their own preferred media, or they themselves are their own media, and they don't want an extra set of eyes seeing or capturing things that could potentially disrupt the narrative that they want to put out.
Because
there's, I think, a fair bit of strategy. There is a lot of thought, I think, that goes into different types of demonstrations, right? Choosing to block a particular intersection or a railway track or a sit-in at the mall, or, you know, sometimes the ideas are half-baked and then they're just executed. But other times the intention is to get a particular type of footage out of this event. And if someone is there whose, you know, objectives don't align with that goal, then
you're a problem.
Exactly right.
These are really confusing times when it comes to what it means to be seen. People going to public to make a point wearing masks is a strange thing that we haven't seen before. And this is not the pro-Palestine movement. I think it was during the vaccine controversy. It became more and more common to see people in public but not wanting their identities known because of this whole phenomenon of doxing, I suppose. We have people at protests. Normally you'd want media attention. Now you are not alone in being despised by protesters. The media is the enemy to a lot of people who are involved in this sort of thing. Maybe you could describe for me, like, what kind of intimidation, violence, what are the physical realities of the work that you've been doing?
I guess to properly answer this, I need to finish explaining how it is I came to this place. Because
sure, we're going in many different directions at once here, so let's get back to that.
I made a comic about Chris Skye, who was like this prominent voice in the anti-vax circles. He didn't like it. And he sicked his hundreds of thousands of followers on me. And so I was at this weird juncture where I can either retract this comic or, you know, try to shift gears and we'll move away from this subject. It's too controversial. Or I could have fun with it. And I had fun with it. So, you know, I recorded a few vignettes about Chris Skye. I made a few more comics. And then as I continued to go to the rallies, people would recognize me as Chris Skye's online enemy. I don't think I was ever in any real danger as a result of that, physical danger, but it was definitely unsettling. And my first experience, I think, being heckled in person.
Can I give our listeners a bit more context? I don't know a ton about Chris Skye, but I know a little. And he is somebody who has an online following. You'll stop me if I get any of this wrong. He's got a bit of a, like, gym bro kind of a persona.
Hi.
Is there a reason you don't have your mask?
Yes, because I have a medical condition, so I don't need to wear one. And I'm also a Canadian citizen, and this is a violation of our Charter Rights, Section 6, and a violation of the Emergency Act 14.1. So I'm going to be declining your test today. If you want to wait in the line for 2 hours, let them put in your nose, go right ahead. But if you have a brain and you have balls, just say no.
He's somebody who people have very strong feelings about. Like, I think we can describe him objectively as a racist, or at least he's said and spread racist things online. And you came under a lot of criticism when you were known as his, I guess, online adversary. Your response to this was like, okay, let's lean into this and stage some kind of a, like, me versus Chris Skye public event. That led to accusations of platforming a hateful person. And then the whole thing became, I think, also objectively a show when rival groups of protesters got into, like, physical skirmishes outside of your office on Spadina at the courtyard of the Chinatown Center.
Yeah.
And this led to, like, criticism of you for facilitating and bringing all of this into the universe.
Yeah, it was more than just criticism. That was actually my first experience personally seeing Black Bloc protesters. So protesters were somewhat dressed in Black Bloc. I wouldn't say they were in strict uniform, but I wasn't expecting to have a group to contend with along those lines.
They were there to shut down Chris Skye.
They did blockade the private venue. Police basically were unhelpful. They threw their hands up in the air. In the course of blockading, although I tried to cancel Chris Skye arriving, he was like, Antifa's there, great. And then took it in his own direction, right? Which involved a little bit of a brawl. All although thankfully no one was seriously injured. But in the aftermath of that, I was characterized as essentially a fascist. And
in this binary discourse, you were the one who wanted the racist to talk, and therefore you are also...
Right, even though, and it was never to be a debate, it was going to be an interview. I was actually launching, you know, the start of the comedy season, and had some stand-up prepared, another interview, which would have been the main portion of the show, and then finish with Chris Sky. And really, it was, you know, if we're using the lexicon of this progressive movement, right, it was an opportunity for me to confront someone who had tried to ruin my business, ruin my name, right? Sit down with them face to face.
Yeah.
What's the outcome of that conversation? You know, we weren't going to come to blows, right? I'm confident in saying that. Would he have gotten the better of me in a battle of wits? Probably not. Would he have stood up and yelled and stormed off? Maybe, right? But like,
the argument,
that was my prerogative to sit down with him at a private venue that I pay rent at, right, for a private show that I was going to broadcast, but it was limited to 25 people in the audience, right? So I had control over these variables, and I was told, no, you cannot do this show.
Uh-huh.
I was told by the Canadian Anti-Hate Network that you can't go ahead with this. It's too dangerous.
All right, so I want to try to fairly summarize what I think the protesters who didn't want Chris Sky to speak and maybe the people of the Anti-Hate Network, I want to put this in a way that they would not feel misrepresented. The argument is this guy is somebody who is anti-science, Chris Sky. He is a racist. He spreads misinformation. And it's not a question of whether or not you come to blows with him or lose an argument. It's a question of, do you platform someone? You are getting more attention and ears on somebody who is dangerous. Why do you reject, or why did you at that time reject that point of view?
So first of all, it would have been Chris Sky platforming me. If we're looking at the numbers on social media reach, as far as who, like, he would have been platforming me, practically speaking. So that's the first part of it. I am a believer in civil liberties. I believe in freedom of expression, freedom of assembly. I think that those are more than just values that we should pay lip service to. I think it actually matters. And I think that people would have been within their right to protest that event, but not to blockade it.
Yeah, when it becomes a physical, right? Stopping people from talking.
So to the extent that, you know, I maintain and continue to express opinions on the stuff that's happening around us, I would say it's fairly limited to supporting rule of law,
mm-hmm.
civil liberties, peace, order, good governance. Those are all values that, you know, I not just support, but try to model. The people who want to play morality police and decide who does or doesn't get to speak, like, they're not qualified arbiters of anything, in my view. And so to then use violence, because they did use violence, mm-hmm. it is a violent act to blockade something where you have no rightful place to be, right? There was pushing, shoving, like, and I just wasn't prepared for any of that.
So what did you learn from that?
Well, I learned that I had maybe underestimated or mischaracterized or misunderstood, you know, that threats to democracy exist across the political spectrum. I think that I had turned a blind eye in the course of some of my, you know, early freedom movement coverage. I had ignored the fact that...
Thuggery from the progressive left.
Thank you. Yeah, I think that that's a fair descriptor. And in the, you know, 3 and a bit years since then, I've had to contend with a daily smear campaign.
Yeah.
From some of the same people involved that night, some of the people who were part of setting it up, who contributed to articles after the fact that spread this false narrative that I am a fascist supporter or sympathizer. There's both an online and a real world aspect to harassment surrounding the work that I do. In an online setting,